7, contact tower 128.15.
Caution, caution. Manual, fuel, manual, fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Curtis.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say that we have two sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety: the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, and Avemco Insurance. Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots and their planes can have safer flights ahead. Well, hello there, Todd.
Hello there, John.
How are you doing today?
Well, not bad at all. I'm fresh back from a visit to the AIAA Aviation 2026 conference down in San Diego, where I presented a paper on unidentified anomalous phenomena, which will be something we'll talk about, that paper, in a future episode. But we have a lot of other interesting things going on. What are you working on right now?
Well, I've been digging through various sources looking for information for us to talk about. You know, and of course, I always look for my favorite subject, which is pre-planning, pre-flights, and after you get into the air, paying attention. But I've got a number of things that I'm looking at in other areas. One is we've been talking about for a while, so I started digging into Cessna 172 accidents that happened with CFIs on board, and just in general with students. So there's a lot of information there that some of it surprised me. And some of it's involving the pre and post pandemic events. And I've got the raw numbers, but we haven't really crunched it all yet on that. So we'll be talking about that again in a very near future. And I've also pulled out some maintenance accidents from those very same reports and some others too. So my favorite subject is to dig into what happens. You know, people forget, pilots sometimes forget that they're the last line of defense on the airworthiness of their airplane, and that includes mechanical reliability. They really need to know what was done to their airplanes. And I love bringing it up, the fact that in one of your pre-flights, you found new hardware on one airplane, and you went to great lengths to figure out why that was.
And the short story there is the wing had been replaced on the aircraft, and I wasn't aware of it until after I'd done my flight that day. Had I been aware of fully beforehand, I would have said, you know what, today I'm flying another airplane.
That was an interesting one. And I'm also looking at the ASRS reports. And the whole reason looking at that, it came... And part of my digging, I don't know how I noticed this, but I did notice it, that the number of reports from 121 carriers has been going down. Now, one would think that should be going up with the number of new pilots they had, the number of problems we've had with just aircraft operations in general. So I haven't got to the bottom of that, but it seems like... There's something going on there. Maybe it's nothing, but it needs to meet some looking at, because the numbers were substantially different.
And we have the exact numbers here, because I went to the ASRS database and asked a very simple question. How many reports from my Part 121 flight were in the database for the year before the pandemic, which is 2019, up to last year, 2025, the last full year for which they have data? And the bottom line is, in 2019, there were 4,304 Part 121 reports. But in 2025, 3,367. roughly 900 or so, a little over 900 reports, fewer than in 2019. Yet from other reports, including the airline organizations, and we're going to get into the details with FAA, specific details when I can find the right database, it looks like the number of flights that have occurred in 2025 exceed what happened before the pandemic. So how can you have as many roughly flights as before the pandemic, yet roughly 20% fewer reports going on?
Right, especially with the problems we've seen with air traffic control. Pilots, if they think they did something not proper, or if they saw something not proper, they would file a report. They were always good with that. So we're going to need to touch that a little bit. It's inconclusive, like the other three things that I mentioned. We're just picking up some what looks like trends, and maybe there's something there, maybe there's nothing there, but we continue to look for it.
And a brief return to the Part 121 situation. I also compared that with the numbers coming from Part 135 operators, which are not going to be flying the same kinds of aircraft as Part 121, lower capacity. And a lot of the business jet and fractional ownership jet market would be Part 135 operations. They had 299 reports in 2019, before the pandemic, and up to 330 in 2025, after the pandemic. 10% increase. Now, it's harder to get the hard numbers on Part 135, but I find it interesting that their numbers haven't gone down.
Yeah. Well, like I said, there may be something there, maybe nothing. We're going to look at it.
Whether you're flying a 135 or 121, if you have a situation that you should write an ASARS report, please do so. You'll help the entire industry by doing so.
And we've had a lot of people on other podcasts talking a lot about the G200 accident. And I've done a lot of work on that because that particular airframe has origins or pieces of it coming from other sources. So it's going to be interesting to see what transpires. But there's been a lot of noise on other podcasts and YouTube channels. They've already got it figured out. And there's been very, very little information out. I mean, basically, we know about the event. He took off, had an emergency, came back. It appears that he broke the airplane when he landed, drove the landing gear up. And, of course, as soon as I saw that, I was started digging and looking for, what was his load? Was he carrying something? There was no passengers on board. But it appears that he may have had a full fuel tanks coming out. And so I started looking around, and one of the things that I'd noticed was the price of fuel at that airport was considerably cheaper than any other airport in the area. So maybe that's why he filled his tanks up. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see what the report says. And I know you, Todd, you didn't particularly care about reports from the Dominican Republic.
Well, the Dominican Republic, and let's back up a little bit, the way it works when it comes to accident investigations, the country that the accident happens in most cases, is the country that does the investigation. Now, the Dominican Republic, they've had accidents in the past, they've had reports in the past, but the amount of resources and expertise that can be brought to bear on an accident depends on what country you're talking about. So how much of an investigation will be done will depend on that authority. And the manufacturer, which is Gulfstream, they might have a representative there, or the engine manufacturer might have a representative there. We don't know. It's going to be run by the Dominican Republic. And as the country of registration, this aircraft was registered in the United States. The NTSB would be what's called a party to the investigation, meaning the NTSB represents the United States. So if there is a need for a subsystem manufacturer that's a U.S. manufacturer, they would work with the NTSB as part of the investigation. How long will the investigation take? Unclear. How open will the results be to the general public? Also unclear. But I will say this. Unlike the NTSB, where you will very likely have not only an accident report, but a lot of background information, what's called the public docket, I don't believe the Dominican Republic has in the past had a public docket type system to go with their accident reports.
Yeah, I don't remember, so I can't say one way or the other. But you open up a very good question here because I had one other accident, a Cessna 172 accident here in the United States. And I'd like to add that, you know, just because it's a foreign entity doing the report doesn't mean it's going to be good, doesn't mean it's going to be bad. And just because we have the NTSB doing a report doesn't mean it's going to be good, it doesn't mean it's going to be bad. It used to mean it was going to be good. But in recent years, leave something to be desired. And I wanted to talk about an accident that occurred in 2023, 10/20, 2023 to be exact. And the accident report from the NTSB is pretty thin, to say the least. And the reason why I chose this accident is because it fits into what I say at the end of every show. And I think I've said on this program multiple times before how painful it is for me when I go through accidents and come across both maintenance accidents, which this is not one, but also accidents that happen that shouldn't happen. Fortunately, this one had no fatalities. The outcome could have been different just a few minutes earlier, and we'll get into that in a second. But the NTSB in recent years has had a number of reports that leave a lot to be desired, and this is one of them. So, having said all that, let's talk about this 172 that was being flown by a 27-year-old pilot who had 288.9, so 290 hours at the time, and he was out flying better part of the day, you know, 4 hours or so, maybe a little more. If he picked the airplane up in the morning and he flew it to another airport to pick up some friends, flew with them for 2 hours and 10 minutes, he landed someplace, they took on some fuel, and then flew back to the airport where he picked up his friends from, dropped them off. And 10 minutes later, he had to land because he ran it out of fuel, basically.
Now, before you go
So.
on, the description you just gave is much richer than what was in the actual accident report. You had to go into the public docket and look at two different pieces of information, one a pilot statement and one a statement from an FAA investigator, that really put some meat on the bones that were on that report. It was a one-page report, very short, a probable cause, and probable cause statement wasn't really backed up by information in the final report, but by reading the public docket information, the picture was clear. Let's read what was written. The last sentence of the analysis is: the pilot noted that verification of total fuel on board before each departure and a more accurate usage of the airplane's performance charts could have prevented the accident. Okay, sounds good. Now let's look at the probable cause. The NTSB determines the probable causes of this accident to be the pilot's inadequate pre-flight inspection and fuel planning and improper in-flight decision-making, which resulted in a total loss of engine power due to fuel exhaustion. Now, the improper decision-making in flight, there was no real explanation of that in the analysis section. But when you look at the public docket, among other things, he didn't measure the fuel fully before taking off at the beginning of the day, using a dipstick to verify what was on the fuel gauges. And as I've probably said at least a couple times during our many podcasts, in my experience flying this kind of aircraft, the Cessna 172, the instrument that is least reliable, good, but not as reliable as, let's say, the compass, is going to be the fuel gauge. And my going-in assumption is, unless I know otherwise, if it says a quarter tank, I'm assuming it's just about empty, and I should either land or not take off, depending on the situation. And in this case, it was a question of a few gallons difference. He thought it had a few more gallons in it. The airplane thought differently, and the airplane engine stopped running. Fortunately, like you said, he was able to walk away from this with a substantially damaged aircraft. But had it happened with his friends on board, would have been a different story, in my opinion.
Hello, aviation enthusiasts, safety professionals, and curious minds. Welcome to Flight Safety Detectives. We are thrilled that you dropped by. Here, we dive deep into the world of aviation safety. From incident investigations and technical analysis to lessons learned and what they mean for safer skies. As a member of our channel, you get exclusive member-only perks, first access to new episodes, live stream discussions, and Q&A sessions. We are a community of fellow safety detectives who love aviation as much as you do. If you're passionate about aviation or just curious about how things work, we'd love to have you on board. Hit join, ring the bell to be notified, and jump into the discussions in the comments. Strap in, because together we're going to explore aviation safety like never before.
You know, when he dropped off his friends, he had 3 gallons, 3.7 gallons left in his tank, roughly. So he never checked it in the morning. Maybe he thought the gauges were higher than what they were. But in any event, he had 5 opportunities where he could have checked his fuel on the ground. And obviously he didn't. He was doing the math in his head. You know, maybe he used pencil and paper, but he said whatever he started with the assumption that the fuel was on board wasn't adequate. So he added 28 gallons of fuel. In theory, he used 26 of it, roughly. So his burn may have been a little higher than what the published fuel consumption rates were, or his flying style was a little bit using more fuel than the best economy. But in any event, not checking your fuel, just adding with an assumption that you're going to have enough is, you know, that's the poor planning part.
I'm reading between the lines a little bit of the, what they call the NTSB Pilot Operator Aircraft Accident Incident Report, where we have some details about the pilot's background. The pilot had a Class 2 medical certificate, which is one class above what you need to be just a private pilot. And he was listed as a private pilot. And reading between the lines, the second class medical certificate is for someone who intends to do something beyond just flying for his or her own personal needs. What that is, I don't know. 280 some odd hours, the amount that he had, was not a small amount. It's on the order of 40 to 60 hours before someone typically gets a license. Or well under 100 hours before one gets a license. So this person has had some experience. What kind of experience in the last 90 days, where it was only, I believe, 20 hours, that remains to be seen. It would have been useful for us trying to learn from this accident if there is more information there. But this is, again, a situation where no one died, everyone walked away, and perhaps there was not that impetus to get a detailed report out. But I will say this. He had a number of friends on board the aircraft on the previous leg. An aircraft of that size that has several passengers in it behaves differently than an airplane that has only a pilot or a pilot and an instructor. And I'm willing to bet that although this pilot had a lot of practice of, you know, gliding the aircraft if a simulated engine out, etc., and landing and taking the aircraft off routinely, probably didn't do so a lot with people on board. So in a situation where the fuel is out, you're going through your checklist, and you're setting up the aircraft for landing, he or she probably had quite a bit of experience flying the airplane lightly loaded, but not as much experience flying it full of passengers. In other words, the landing for an engine out situation that's close to being fully maxed out will be more challenging than landing with a relatively empty aircraft.
You know, it's pre-planning. I hop on it over and over and over. I mean, so many accidents with negative outcomes. This isn't bad. Yeah, he's going to get FAA is going to punish him a little bit, slap him on the hands. But he's all right. Nobody got injured. Nobody died. So it's a lesson that we all can learn from. You've got to treat an airplane like it's empty fuel tanks when you pick it up until you know otherwise. You got to make sure that everything is in place where it was, especially if it was left overnight someplace. Who knows what happened to it overnight? I mean, there's a reason why we look into all the openings on an airplane to see if some critters have crawled inside. It isn't just long-term airplanes that have that problem. Stuff can happen overnight. Some kind of thing happen even less than that. You've got to follow the rules, the procedures that are in place, right? They weren't put together with all that detail in them from the very beginning. A lot of that detail was added after people had problems and maybe even fatalities. You know, the age-old saw that a lot of people use is the FAA's regulations are written in blood. Well, most of us don't like to agree with that, but there is some truth to it. So please, if you're a pilot, pay attention to what you're doing. Man, don't take anything for granted. It just frustrates me. I can't even say anymore.
Well, that sounded a whole lot like the last word, which is, I can't add to that, so I'll do the second to last word out of sequence. The second to last word is, what if? Okay, it's two words. But I'm looking at this pilot operator report, and the what if that jumps out at me is, they say here that the maximum gross weight of the aircraft was 2,300. The weight at the time of the accident was 1,800. Now, by my mathematical calculations, that's 500 pounds. You say, oh, you know, that's a lot of leeway there. Well, let's assume you had a full tank of fuel. This holds around 35, 40 gallons of fuel, and I'm doing math in my head here. That's 150 pounds right there, which means you have another 350 pounds to max out the aircraft. And the report elsewhere, the inspector said he had friends on board. Did he have two friends or three friends? This is an airplane that seats four people. If they're two average-size Americans, that would have been pretty much to grossing out the airplane, not grossing out, max grossing the aircraft if everyone are on board and you had full fuel. Even with an empty fuel tank, again, it would have been a significant fraction of the maximum possible weight on board the aircraft if you had two or more people on board in addition to the pilot. So my last word, the what if, is, in this case, the what if didn't happen. What if they had more people on board? Probably would have ended differently. Thank goodness it didn't.
How true. All right, and please, please fly safely. I'm not going to say it all over again. Just please fly safely. Keep the head on a swivel. Pay attention.
Let me talk to the folks who have joined the Flight Safety Detectives, our members. We thank you very much for doing so, and we're hoping that you are enjoying your membership and the benefits that come with that, including getting early access to new episodes and other goodies to be determined later. And if you're interested in becoming a member, you'll see a graphic on the screen with an arrow pointing to the join button on the YouTube channel. Join, do what is necessary to become a member at whatever level you'd like, and enjoy those benefits. And if you have questions, whether or not you're a member or not, write to us at flightsafetydetectives@gmail.com. And we're not leaving out sponsors. We love sponsors. We can always use more, and we hope that you can use our content to attract our audience to your product or service. Contact us at fsdsponsors@gmail.com. We'll have a conversation.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. We really value all of our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you. So if you like this, give us 5 stars inside your podcast platform.
We want to keep the conversation going with you. So we'd love for you to engage with us on our social media channels. We're on Instagram, X, Facebook, LinkedIn, and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetydetectives@gmail.com. By the way, if you're watching this on YouTube, we're working on growing this channel, and it really helps if you all comment. So please do that. We read them all.
And be sure to subscribe. For decades, Avemco Insurance Company has been an advocate for pilot safety by promoting and sponsoring continuous pilot training and education. One of their initiatives has been to reward pilots who actively participate in being more proficient with savings on their insurance premium through the Avemco Safety Rewards Program. Pilots save by earning new ratings, getting recurrent training, participating in the Fast Team Wing Program, and listening to podcasts like ours and other Avemco-related courses and training. Call 888-879-0389 for a free quote or visit avemco.com/flightsafety. Don't forget to tell them the Flight Safety Detective sent you for an automatic 5% off.